And just to tell you what he said about the PodSafe archive, basically the idea is the studios of the stations are used to record music that's licensed so anyone can use it in a podcast. Anyone using it in a podcast has to reference Pacifica. Our name gets out, their distribution gets out, and we provide a service to Civic Media because what's restricting most podcasts is they can't use any copyrighted music. So if we were creating large stores of music content that anybody could use, we'd be serving our civic need, and with this dual license, we could also distribute it via the kind of record label idea that he has, so that our revenue generation is not at all antagonistic to our civic role. They're synergistic. Next person is Don.
Well, briefly, because a lot of things have been already mentioned. You know, this is very exciting discussion and hearing from Pete and Nathan and Brian and so on. I have had quite a few discussions with Dave over this. To me, we're talking about keeping Pacifica relevant, because what Pete has said is that the everything is moving rapidly now, and we can be even left farther behind. So to me, it's like building the reputation and the relevancy and the profile of Pacifica, so that we're out there in community radio, we're out there in the radio world, and that we're providing more and more. So I agree with Nathan. I'm more and more supporting a kind of free distribution of material. But of course, the thing that Dave just talked about is the attribution to Pacifica. It will keep the us moving forward and giving people options whether to hear material free or to order. But just increasing the reputation and the high profile of Pacifica will up our revenue, because more and more people will feel they want to be a part as listener sponsors of our stations. I think Pacifica will not be able to electrify in the future, electrify people just sticking with the radio stations and so on. And with regard to the programmers that Bob referred to, programmers and producers want to have their stuff heard. So if Pacifica is the route for that, if Pacifica has the distribution and the reputation and the profile, I agree with Bob that agreements can be reached. I mean, there can be not like exclusive ownership, but mutual ownership for distribution. And then
distribution rights is a better term than ownership, because the producer's the owner. What we're asking for is non-exclusive distribution rights.
Okay, my concept is that the contract be written in such a way that the distribution rights to non-commercial entities be unlimited, that they have enough, that they will build the faith to agree that Pacifica can distribute to non-commercial sources in an almost unlimited way. Now, maybe Bob wouldn't agree with that. I've also talked to Brian, and I fully understand the problem of ownership and copyright. I mean, we've had discussions about the Martin Luther King Jr. family and the very tight control that the family controls over a lot of the stuff that's in our archives that we cannot release because we don't have an agreement yet with the family that those items can be released. But I mean, I'm going to end there because I know others want to speak.
We are basically at time. We're a little past. Do people want to? There's seven more people on the stack plus Pete. Not to say he's not a person. It's just he's had an opportunity to speak. So he's okay. Pete is okay in getting off the stack.
To extend time, 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Seven people.
Including Pete.
Mr. Chair, the public comment would be starting, so is there a way we can get a quick sense of whether
is
they
the audience is here? Do you mind if we extend for 20 minutes before going to public comment to allow the people who haven't spoken yet to speak? I'm not seeing any objection. So is there any objection from the board to Rob was asking for 20 minutes actually?
I don't know what your time is going to be like, but just
We may be able, actually, given the number of people, to have a little less of public comment because there's a half an hour for public comment, and I'm not sure. Well, no, there are probably 15 people at least who want to speak. What he said was he doesn't want extending this to push other things back, but there is this sort of, you know, conservation of time thing.
Yes. William, you should have a
sympathy for us. Since there hasn't been an objection, maybe what we can do, since the local audience is a KPFA audience, is to address his concern by flipping the order of the focus station. So KPFA precedes WPFW, and that will let the local folks go, and only Ron will be, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah?
The problem with that is that I have to leave right after my presentation.
Okay. Well, then we won't be able to do that. Another possibility is to hold this discussion and to append it at the end.
No, it'll never happen.
Okay, well, there's a motion to extend by 20 minutes. Is there a second?
A second.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, we'll proceed that way. Next person is Alan.
I'll try to be brief, relatively brief. I think that what Nathan said, obviously, you know, I have a background in indie media, and I'm very much on board with that. I think along the lines of what Bob said about unpaid staff and trying to get a win-win situation, I, though, having that background in indie media, being utterly supportive of free distribution as far and wide as possible, is I just have a very strong concern. I don't know how this works with the revenue model for the archives, but I think that as a board we have responsibility to the archives to make sure that we can pursue something that will really, in effect, allow our media to go as far and wide as possible, which is what I want to see happen. And I'll talk a little about one thing I think is super important about that if we're proceeding across the Internet. But then... you know, if we do stick with this thing, we're after 90 days. We only have a 90-day limit. That's probably going to drop off.
Some shows are permanent, right?
Okay, but certainly if it goes, you know, 90 days is available, then it can go, obviously, to the archives after 90 days. That's one thing. But again, I think the board has to be responsible about looking at the manner in which the archives remains vibrant. And also, I do think the second thing also relates to the archives, which is super important in this respect, is the manner in which this material is organized on the web. I mean, I believe that given the quality of some Pacifica radio that we produce, it does make sense. We're in the game to be able to produce an audio, a website where people go to get Pacifica material and other independent producers. I think it's a no-brainer how independent producers get involved with us, because if we have the kind of website, like look what happened with the British paper, The Guardian. It's just exploded since the Internet. It's, I think, the most popular, and it's the lefty paper, not a radical paper, but a lefty paper in England, and I think it's the most popular English language paper up against the few that were already the top ones before it, but it's done very, very well. Pacifica Radio could do the same thing. We obviously have an extremely unique product, and we speak a heck of a lot more truth about American society than just about anywhere else you can find it. So people are going to gravitate towards us, and we sure as heck have more producers than we can fit onto our airwaves now who want to produce for us. This gives them an opportunity. And not only that, every local show from anywhere that goes onto our website then is available everywhere. Now, we haven't achieved the end where people are turning to us for all this material, but I think that we can be seriously a player in establishing a website which people turn to for this audio. A key element in achieving that is the quality of the design of the web page. And important therein is when somebody wants to hear a show, to give an example, on, you know, there's music shows, there's political shows, there's health and spirituality shows that we have in KPFK. We have other genres we organize things through. Let's say they want to see a health and spirituality show. It has to be clear on the website how they're going to find that. And again, it seems sort of logical to me that we have the people at the archives who understand very well how to organize this type of stuff, and certainly their experience in this regard can be very helpful in the organization of the website. But again, that's going to be very key. just how efficiently effective our website is so that people know where to get what material they're looking for.
And you should know that archive.org, which stores all that content, has a terrible interface, but other people have written front ends to it. You're really talking about the front end for access, and in a truly open model, we can allow different people to write front ends to our content. So we don't necessarily have to have had the right solution because we benefit from whoever does get it right.
As long as it works out.
John Sirius.
I want to talk to wide distribution because I think that there's certain things that will be helpful to us back home. Anyway, does anybody remember these bright guys that worked for a bank that found a way when they did large transactions, they were like little fractions
shave
of
a fractional
penny.
Cent. Yeah.
Right. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they, before they got caught, they made like a few million dollars, right? This is the wide distribution model because what we're doing is we're putting it out there to the widest group. So maybe if they send us, if millions of people send us $10, you know? As opposed to saying, okay, we're going to sell $100 premiums. That's one thing. Second of all, we can embed, Dave tells me that there's new technology to embed data inside the MP3s, like let's say a website, so we can bring it back to Pacifica.org so that somebody hears a program that's great, they can look at their little player and it says Pacifica.org. They go to Pacifica.org. There's a link to our station archive. So we've got kind of wide distribution, flow back home. So that will be useful also. So that would really interconnect all of this. So that also, we have some stuff that nobody else has. We've got, what, 40,000 tapes in the archives?
Well, that's called 50.
Okay, 50,000 tapes, and there are plenty of producers that in the past that have their own tapes that are not in the archives. If we have some type of model like this, they may want to get involved, and we start, we get back some of the history that we don't have at this point.
Thank you very much, John. Rob and then AC.
Thank you. I think this is a great discussion, and it's this sort of creative thinking that I think will help us find more common cause than the differences that we have. I think that the first thing that we do have to do is establish the philosophy and the vision for this. And my personal feeling is that a free distribution, the widest possible distribution, is the route we should take. First of all, we have a tradition of being non-commercial. We're not about selling stuff to the public, and quite frankly, we're not good at selling stuff to the public. I'm not saying that where we have people like the archives that are selling things and that's working for them, that we should stop that. But I think we should adopt as something that we can do is take the programming that we know we're good at developing and get it to the widest possible audience. If nothing else, it will prevent us perhaps to some extent from fighting over restricting one another to our local station microphones, which has not been a good strategy for the organization. Secondly, I think that we must identify some technology partners, both resource partners as well as technical consultants. In the meeting, the one meeting that I had with Professor Lessig and David almost a year ago, Professor Lessig made it very clear that there were people in the internet world that would support Pacifica and help us raise money to develop our architecture and human resource infrastructure if we really wanted to become the type of organization that was about distributing the material to the widest possible audience. So if we're clear that as a communications organization, that's what we're about, they're basically saying we can introduce you to some other people that have an interest in you becoming successful. Right now, we don't have any partners like that of any description, and I think that's very important. However, I would point out that if we do that, we're really going to need to have a point person from the organization that works with that group so that we don't have to bring those people into board meetings and LSB meetings, you know, where they become publicly eviscerated. But I think that it's clear that those people those people can come together to help the organization. I think that we must immediately also create a task force that involves Krigler and Siegel, some of our management staff and Lessig, so that we can set the parameters for having the discussions around ownership and begin to inform our programmers and producers, paid and unpaid staff, of the role that rights and interests play in coming up with agreements and licenses. We've been trying to have this discussion within the context of the programming committee, and in many cases we run into conceptual inabilities of the members of our committees, many of whom are programmers, to understand how it's possible with a different type of license to address the distribution problems that they think would be faced. And the reality is, since they're not lawyers in this field, they don't understand it. We can never explain it to them because we're not the experts, but I think the experts have to work with us in, first of all, breaking out what is it that everyone owns and what are the rights and interests that we can arrange in different licensing and agreements formats so that everybody can get on board. But I think we have to begin doing that now, because if we don't, we're going to just delay the time that it takes to deal with the objections and the unreadiness and the fear that we have from programmers and producers and people who basically feel that they will not be treated well because maybe they haven't been treated well in the past. But that's going to take a long time. Additionally, those licensing agreements are also going to have to address specific distribution issues around news programming, around music programming, around the programming that the archives, doing the things that the archives is trying to do now. So I think it's critical that that group gets put together as quickly as possible. The other thing that needs to take place is we need to have some kind of a plan for the architecture that we're going to put together that's going to take us into the next decade with this. And obviously, Sirius, John Almella, and Pete and others will have to be involved in that. The other part of that is going to be setting training so that what Pete referred to as the human resource lag can be overcome. We need to be able to train our staff, the people that come into the staff, to be able to use the technologies at the same time that we design the technologies that are going to make it possible for us to assemble news broadcasts more quickly. There's also going to have to be a production collaboration component of that so that producers at the stations and people that we want to bring independently, as Lonnie suggested, understand how this model is going to work. Finally, I think for the development work that we do, we have to appreciate the fact that where we are exchanging money, it's more and more going to take place on the Internet. So I think we're going to have a lot of our development work merging with things on the Internet, whether it has to do with the design of web pages or how we use the Internet to collect money for merchandising or whatever we're selling. That's it. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Rob. Very well put. Yep. AC.
Yeah, I think Rob has said a lot of what I wanted to say, so I'll just shorten mine up. I wanted to ask the technical experts here, how do you see taking the Pacific a message that's historically been carried, the social change message, the alternative media message, how do you see that fitting into the technical dimensions that you've outlined today?
Actually, Pete and Brian maybe can address that a little bit. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, Brian was up next, so Brian, you want to take a whack at that? And we'll get Pete to say something quickly on that.
So the question is, how would social movements be impacted by wider distribution of the material?
The message that we have now, which is we do project ourselves as an alternative media.
Right.
And we do go after...
Can you do that on the mic, AC, so the people on the stream can hear you and so there's a record of your comments?
Yeah, we do project ourselves as an alternative media to the commercial media, and we also talk in the main about social change and so forth. How do we keep the content of that and still utilize the technology that you all have been talking about?
How technically do we keep the content? In other words, archiving it for future generations?
Yeah.
Actually, that was one of my comments, was the concern about archiving. And the understand. I think I was talking with Nathan earlier, that when we have a tangible analog tape and we know how to preserve it and how to work with it to make it accessible for the future, it is the Rosetta Stone. We have something that actually can be touched. Democracy Now! Spends a great deal of invested time and energies and money into free distribution of their programming, and as Dave mentioned, they also do book tours and they write books and they do other things. They also did hire a professional archivist in Democracy Now! A number of years ago that the Pacific Radio Archives helps to support, and they archive audio, and they struggle with archiving the film and video as well. And so I'm concerned. I know the word archive and each station has websites that have archiving, and I do appreciate the work and the accessibility, but it is the incorrect term, and I think that I've mentioned this many, many times, that if a program is available for 90 days and then disappears, that is not archiving.
I'm sorry, were you done with
that? The archives did try, started a pilot project with KPFK where we bought the equipment and set up a 24/7 recording mode that we do record and keep permanently on a hard drive at archival quality bit rate, the entire 24/7 KPFK archive. It is going well. It is proving that in addition to the website streams that are for free, that people still call us and ask for CD copies, and we're able to access those materials within the same day. So I would like to see the same item duplicated for each station. And I want to say that each station would cost somewhere around $5,000 to $7,000 for the equipment, and then additional monies for the right kind of feed, that each station would provide a high bit rate quality feed for us. One thing I haven't heard today is the idea that we also have the speakers that come to Pacifica and the events that we record that come to Pacifica that have not given release to the producers to distribute the program. For instance, in 1999, when the takeover of KPFA happened, we did have 20 hours of Alice Walker material that was used by the executive director at the time incorrectly on KPFA as preemption of the walkout. Alice Walker called the Pacifica Radio Archives and immediately rescinded all permission to those programs. So it highlighted the fact that we did not have the right to use the voices of the speakers that came onto Pacifica at our whim. So the solution to that is that the speaker release that was formed by John Krigler and the Pacifica Archives in 1999 and has been distributed many, many times to the stations should be used, as it always had been in the past, for each speaker and interviewer that comes into the station to be given the opportunity to sign release for wide distribution of the material. That also includes poetry, pre-published materials.
Brian, can you say what you just said again? Because I think it went by fast and people don't understand what you're saying. Brian is saying that any time you're not getting a release from any guest you have, you are adding to the pile of content that we do not know what we can do with. So is that correct, Brian?
Right. If the archives receives a program that has the interviewer, a speaker, a poet, a musician, if that producer did not get the speaker release from those participants, then we have no information to go by to enable us to distribute it widely through the internet or anywhere else other than that one broadcast. The commercial model. Time. Let me just say one more thing. KPFK, the premium issue. KPFK produced through a grant the incredible Katrina special recently that was broadcast and is in the archive for formal archiving. We were approached by KPFK management just last week and were restricted from making that available to audiences until it was used as a premium for the fund drive. Completely understandable, but when that model of free or premium use, I don't know who gets to say so yet.
That's one of the issues that's causing ambivalence in places that's slowing us down and we have to resolve. Pete, you have something real quick in response to AC's?
In response to AC and also what David has asked earlier in terms of what services we can offer to leverage this. the short answer is we have tremendous potential here. I started with the bad news, but I'm happy to say I can end with good news. We can offer distribution and exposure to startup podcasters, for example, that they cannot achieve on their own. We tackled this last NFCB. There was a panel that I was on that was discussing, will podcasting make community radio irrelevant? And that was the whole topic for 90 minutes, discussing basically this whole issue. And when I looked at the numbers, at WBAI, I saw that of the 50 programs that we podcast, within 12 months of beginning this, again, with very little buy-in and support, more than half of the programs were achieving over 1,000 podcast requests a month. And some shows were achieving 5,000 and 10,000 requests a month. In 6 months, the archive had redistributed either download or podcast or by replay over 250,000 hours that would have just been lost. This is content we sent out over the air. It would have been lost, and we replayed it 250,000 times within 6 months. So the potential. Now, if you were 50 podcasters and started 50 shows on your own without a name like WBAI or Pacifica to help with exposure and distribution, you would never achieve these numbers. In fact, the people in the panel were astonished comparatively how little infrastructure is supported. The results are there if we tap into it.
Because unlike anybody else, one of the things Pacifica can offer is the use of its FM airwaves to drive listeners to our platform.
And the last thing, if I may, the tremendous potential is there because people are using the internet to organize. Radical people, conservative people, etc., are forming their own now pre-existing communities that are there, that with some effort and time, we can tap into. Free marketing efforts are there, whether you're talking about community-based sites like MySpace or Flickr, whether you're talking about news groups, old email, old internet technology or new internet technology, doesn't matter. There are tons of free communities that we can target with our very targeted programming. We have to make that effort.
Yeah. Lisa, you had something quick.
I just want to say what Pete just said also addresses the issue of listenership in terms of that. Just because you don't see numbers in one way does not necessarily mean that they're leaving. It means that there's a change going on. But if you are saying that we're getting all those podcasts and downloads, that says something about the issue of listenership. And just one other thing real quickly, as we talk about the Internet, we also have to remember when thinking of marketing strategies that the Internet is also something that people who read, not necessarily listen to radio. So that's another potential market right there, because I know so many people are working and can't listen, but they will read on the Internet.
Although the experience at WFMU is that the donation for audio content on the web, the rate is identical to what they get on the air, but they don't get any donations for text, but the text serves as a valuable adjunct to the audio, for what it's worth. Ray.
Yeah, I won't be long. What I'm interested in, actually, in spite of what Pete said about us being behind on technology, is hopefully a range of technologies are available that can be offered on the same platform. Because some of the communities I'm interested in don't have any technology, don't have the means to acquire. So they're not doing it because they're 52 years old. This is not part of their culture. This is not a primary way for them to interact. So I'm hoping that as we're doing this, we can still maintain within our system the possibility to reach out to people who are not technology advanced and yet are interested very much in the content of what we have to offer, and that we have the flexibility to have feedback from them also. I didn't hear that yet, and I'm assuming that I take that for granted. There'll be some model, some form to get feedback from people and be able to adjust what we put on the air and so on. So that's all I will say. And I guess I'm limiting it because I'm really new to this discussion in many ways, but that's what I'm hoping, that we're able to preserve a later, very low technology available within the same platform that includes other people who relate that way to the information we have to provide.
Thanks. And it is true, these are very low cost devices. You can do low bandwidth versions that are very accessible. Phil, and then Lydia, and then we'll move the agenda.
Thank you. What Ray just touched on is exactly what I wanted to talk about. First thing I want to do is remind the members here who are on the technology committee that we've got a website that I'd like us to be using, especially because there is so very much to talk about. And these discussions, if we can't preserve them and all engage in them in our own at our own leisure, we really won't be able to embrace the totality of what is a very huge subject. We've addressed one edge of a double-edged sword, the leading edge of technology, but it's the trailing edge of technology that I have to represent because there's not a lot of poor black people in here. I'm one of them, so I'm going to represent my demographic. Some of the people that we want to talk to are picking tomatoes in Immokalee, Florida. Okay? Some of the people that we want to talk to came to Houston and lived in the Astrodome, where we had to, or where radios had to be given to them so that they could hear the broadcasts that we set up in the Astrodome for them. So the ability to distribute technology to people who need technology and to create mobile distribution centers is a part of the technological equation that we have to keep in mind. This is the kind of a situation that costs more than it returns because we're dealing with poor people. So at the other edge, we're going to have to remember that those who can afford to provide this technology and this service, we're going to have to give them something of value. And what we give them, it's tough. We have to convince people that knowing about the person who's cutting their lawn improves their life, makes them better, is of value to them, so that they will contribute to us, so that we can contribute to everyone. Okay? I think I better stop on an applause line here. crank radios, low-power FM distribution. Broadest distribution means enabling people to produce content. When I talked about those pickers in Immokalee, they not only have to be able to hear us, but they also need to be able to give back to us their lives. So we need a two-way communication. We don't just need to preach to them. If we can get back from them in digital format information about their lives and provide it to the other end of the scale, that's a service to them. And that is happening. Cell phones are part of the technological equation. It's not just computers. People are texting. We need to put that into the mix. The computers are used differently than the radios. And computers do provide a two-way communication. So we can get some kind of information about how our listeners, or yes, how our computer listeners, who constitute a very separate audience from the broadcast listeners, are using their computer. Are they listening during the day while they're at work? Yeah. Who are these people? Do they work for themselves? Do they, are they working at home listening to us? What are they doing? How are they listening? We can get that information if we listen to who's listening to us. So that's something that we need to look into and study so that we know how to approach them, when to bring them, what content they want. Finally, and I say that only because I can't find my place in saying finally, it gets everybody excited. Really?
I'm excited again.
Yeah. The program that our beloved Otis McClay was working on when we lost him at KPFT was setting up internet radio stations in high schools. And we have a few in place. As far as I know, we've never checked back to find out how they're using them or what they're doing with them. Right. But it's a program that I wholeheartedly support. It's dirt cheap, and it's worth its weight in gold. And I'd love to see a renewed emphasis on bringing the technology, the knowledge, the training to the students, and then letting them do with it what they will, and then collecting back from them and giving them the distribution that our mission says we owe them. And that's what I need
for what it's worth. The I learned last night that the internship program or the apprenticeship program at Berkeley, I mean at KPFA, that they actually have gone out or have brought community orgs in, taught them podcasting, and some of them have kept podcasting. So that thing's, you know, not far away. Finally, Lydia.
Now that we have had this wonderful discussion, and I applaud the efforts of Dave Edelson, who has long fought for this discussion to take place on the board, but now it's the responsibility of every single director to take it back to their LSB and see if we can maintain this kind of excitement to have this discussion about the free distribution of this material. And then I might also add that this is not exclusive to Pacifica. The nonprofits that I know some successful nonprofits who do very well financially or have in the past, who sell every single piece of paper they have. You can't get, you know, like a three-piece piece of literature without paying for it. And they've done very well until now. And the point is that they have never been able to grow their support because they have not engaged in free and broad distribution of their literature because they always feel they have to sell it. And that's a very important lesson to learn because the same things that are plaguing us in terms of raising money is true of the entire nonprofit world. And so that's why we have to go to look to a different model. This is a model that will succeed minimally. We know that we can at least raise money from one out of every 10 listener, as we do now, our listener with the ratio versus our membership. But by the exposure that we're talking about, when we would increase our listenership tenfold by this various means, we still end up increasing our revenue by that, even using the same ratio of 1 to 10. So we don't have to be afraid of that, and that's the message that I would like to see us take back to our stations and have this discussion at the local level. Every single director here has that responsibility, and I hope we'll all take that back. Bye.
And one end note, you know, none of this distribution is under the supervision of the FCC. You can say what you want. Okay. And with that, we're going to move. Now, Zarina, for religious reasons, is going to have to leave us, and she had some questions she wanted to ask. So I think we should take a five-minute break. But before that, I'd like to let Zarina take the time to follow up on some of the questions and points she wanted to make with regards to WPFW before she has to leave us. And we're very grateful that despite this being Ramadan, she's been able to be here.
Thank you. And these just few questions that I wanted to direct to Ron Pinchback. I wanted to know, this has to do with programming, and I suppose that Rob will be chiming in at some point, but the 11 o'clock p.m. time that you stated that you're going to be instituting the a new news block, I'm wondering what is happening or what will happen to the young people who have what's called the Decipher stream Monday through Friday, 11 to 12. One question. Second question, it seems as though every quarterly board meeting the question comes up about what's happening with radio co-op or a program like that, a training program. So where do we go with the training, particularly where news is concerned? And I suppose that I would like to ask, this question really would be going to Verna, but also to you, Ron. I'm just wondering in terms of headline news, if it would be expanded in terms of the time that it's being offered. We only get it, I think, 4 or 5 times a day. It's about 5 minutes. And what I'm noticing is it's primarily, to me, it sounds like rip and read. I've done news before, and I want to know what we're going to get in terms of, like, some elongated information around the news area. Okay? So.
Okay. Before I get started, I'm going to ask the indulgence of the board regarding this. I understand that you're going to go to a public comment following this, and I know that's going to take some time. If it's okay with the board, I would like to go ahead and make my presentation as part of my question and answer period with Zarina. That way we can get it out the way and, you know, and then give our respective host a greater opportunity to be a part of this. I think a lot of questions that you asked during our budget series of discussions may have answered some questions people may already have.
Okay, well, let me ask the question of the board, because we selected WPFW as a focus station, the intention being to have at least an hour to deal with issues of the station. So are you asking whether you could give your presentation and then field questions for 40 minutes after public comment, or are you asking to dispense with the latter?
No, I'm asking if I could go ahead and make my presentation now for whatever length of time is appropriate for the board, you know, how many questions the board has for me, and surrender the remaining of my time to public comment and the and our sister station's presentation.
First, I'd like to ask whether the board is willing to accommodate the request at this time.
Question?
Yes.
It's up to the audience.
Well, I think we need to...
First, it's up to the board. First, I have to know, if the board doesn't want to do it, then we're not going to do it. Then we ask the listeners, if they don't want to do it, then I'll come back and ask the board how to respond to that.
As much as I would like to accommodate Ron, my first impression is the timeline is not workable. Unless someone explains to me, if WPFW has an hour... And we want listener comment.
Actually, it's 40 minutes.
Pardon me?
It's 40 minutes.
It was 40 minutes, but we had to adjust it because I was reminded that our resolution called for an hour.
And so we need to know, what time is the hotel planning on
dinner? 7 p.m. is time certain for dinner.
7?
7. So we'll be working around that as a constraint. Okay, let me just ask the audience. Are audience members willing to wait an hour to deal with public comment? Okay, so is the board, given that response from the listeners, what is the board's pleasure?
Okay,
can I ask Ron, what time do you have to leave here?
My flight leaves at 7:30. I would have to leave here by 6.
So that's an hour.
Where does your flight leave from?
Oakland. And the other question is,
we essentially have time right now for public comment. I tell you what, may we do 20 minutes of public comment followed by for 40 minutes?
No.
That will just be enough. And then continue with the remaining public comment after that.
I have a question for the board. Do we need an hour? I mean, that's my question.
The reason for the entire approach is to give adequate time to ask the questions and go into detail and depth about what is happening at the station. I wish we'd had this information before we made our decision to extend our discussion that just terminated. Lisa.
Can I maybe move or make a suggestion that we take 15 minutes of public comment for right now, then we let Ron Pinchback do his presentation, because he's got to make a flight and has to leave and then come back to public comment. But maybe we put it like that.
Let me ask this question. Among the people here, how many are willing to postpone their comment until after? Thank you very much. Then I think what we should do is take the public comment of the people who feel we need to speak right now, and then we will rely upon the graciousness of those who are able to wait until later in the evening and go to Ron immediately after.
Thank you.
And Zarina, what is your timeline? How quickly do you need an answer, and when do you need to leave for your services?
I need to leave by 5:30 to take the shuttle because I'm going to Oakland.
Okay. In that case, Ron, can you just provide her with an answer quickly to those questions? If you could take less than 4 minutes, we'd appreciate it.
Okay. The proposal or the intent is to move the Cypher crew from 11 until midnight, from midnight to 2. We'll be giving them an additional hour. We'll be including some public affairs content within those 2 hours, so it won't just be a music program. That's the intent there. I've already begun talks with those folks to do just that. I'm looking forward to it, actually. I think it'll be a great adjunct coming out of our new news hour. We'll be opening dialogue during that two-hour period to talk about some of the stories and things like that they may have heard during that 11 o'clock segment. So there'll be a tremendous amount of opportunity there for those programmers. Not all of them are pleased with it because of their work schedules and such, but a majority are, and they're looking forward to having an extra hour to expand what they do. In terms of news, the news coordinator, that would be one of their responsibilities to help train new people who want to come in. We're training people right now, incidentally. As I mentioned before, we've got five people that we're training right now to do morning news. And they should be online by next week as well, because they're going to be merging with our morning drive time music programs to add more public affairs content to them. That's one of the reasons why they're there. So we are looking at, you know, additional training, additional news staff and such. We can't pay anyone, so that's why we're trying to do this from a volunteer model.
And can I just ask you again, though, in terms of local news, what will even these five people that are being trained, are they being trained as journalists, or are they being trained just take from the wires and read?
They're being trained
the
as
air.
Journalists. No, they're being trained as journalists. And
sure.
But they're being trained as journalists. They're not. That's the one thing we don't want, is just rip and read.
Right.
That's one reason why we eliminated the announcer position, because that's all that was being done.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much, Ron. Wendy, are you there?
Dave.
Yes.
I need to respond.
Oh, go ahead.
Very briefly.
Well, before you do that, Wendy, are you there? Can you bring me the list of public comment while Vern is speaking?
Zarina, ahead, in terms of the headlines, you say you've done news, so then you know that rip and read is basically just pulling wire copy and reading it. Now, what we have included in the headlines at this time is original interviewing with audit addition, you know, audio inserted into the raps. There's monitoring of Congress hearings, you know, written around the comments of the senators and the representatives. We also have reports from representatives or reporters on the Hill, Leanne Caldwell, often interpieces. So it's not entirely rip and read. In fact, I would say it's minimally that. With a one-person news department, you're going to have to rely on some wire service copy from time to time. But there is a sincere and honest effort to have as much original reporting as can be done. Now, in terms of expanding it, I was just having some sideline conversations about ways we can begin to do that. What we're going to do is try and bring on some journalism students from some of the universities and colleges in the area. And they will be trained in journalistic techniques because they will already be journalism students. And we're hoping that that will be, you know, sort of a notch above just getting volunteers who may have a sincere interest. But that way we will sort of protect the interests of the network. As we send them up on Capitol Hill and those sort of places, we need to have people that are trained in the skills of journalism.
Right. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. So we're now going to move to public comment. And the anybody who is willing to wait, if you just say, I'll take it later, then we'll do that. First person is Kathy Davis.
I can wait.
Thank you. Jim Weber. Next is William Walker and Adrian Lauby.
I'll be quick. Can you hear me all right?
Very well, sir.
Okay. I just want to say that how impressed I am that everybody in this room on this board has been extremely high level of respect, trust, and cooperation to get a common purpose for this board. If Lou Hill was walking this room now, he'd be proud of what he's seeing. But I've been at every board meeting of the KPFA LSB since it started, and not once have I seen anything even beginning to approach this. And you saw a little of this last night. The reason this is a problem is because of the election. The first election was flawed. The second election was more flawed. And the third election next month is going to be worse. And this is the crisis that the Pacifica faces. Now, as far as you're concerned tonight, you're going to have a repeat of what you saw last night. A small group of organized people who are going to come here and make demands of you. And some of these are a little delicate demands. They're often aggressive. Some are hostile. And some are you better do what I want you to do or else. It was that kind of a demand, symbolically. And I just want you to be aware you're going to get this tonight. And you should, and maybe because I'm bringing it out, they might tone it down and be nicer to you. But hopefully we can get through this without too much anger.
Thank you very much, sir. Deb, are you keeping time?
No.
We have 90 seconds. If you could notify people, 30 seconds. And we'll go to 2 minutes for the people who can wait. But for right now, we're going to do what we've done before, which was 90 seconds. William Walker.
You want me to pass, right?
Yeah. If you're able, if it's easy for you. Thank you. Adrian?
Thank you. My name's Adrian Lobby. I'm going to be the first in a few people who are going to present you with a little mini report. We're from KPFA, and we represent an 8-person committee of people with disabilities and their allies. We're unpaid staff from the disability program Pushing Limits and the program Women's Magazine, and a listener representative from the LSB. We've been meeting for over a year to research access needs at KPFA and have prepared a 6-page report, which you should have in front of you. If anyone listening on the web would like a copy of this report, please write us at Pushing Limits, all one word, kpfa.org, and we'll send you a copy. Our committee works from a holistic disability rights approach. That is access that is inclusive and accommodates everyone, paid staff, unpaid staff, volunteers, and listeners. Whether or not they are covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act, Section 504, OSHA regulations, or any other law. Because we think that because Pacifica is supportive of diversity and human rights, we want to hear that Pacifica will support a disability rights perspective on access for all at KPFA.
This is Eddie...
Eduarte.
Yeah, from Pushing Limits and also Disability Access Committee. One of the things to realize about the people doing this work is that we're a number of different disabilities. It's not like sometimes you hear criticisms of a group or saying that it's disabilities from one sector, but we're pretty different and we do pretty different areas. Like I work for the Oakland Tenants Union, and I'm also a candidate for Assembly District in California for Peace and Freedom Party. We're here to share some news with you. We've made a critical breakthrough at KPFA with Pushing Limits, with technological advances, national consultation, committee work, and a focused individual. Pushing Limits will begin a pilot project to provide web transcription of its program later this winter or fall. And that's the first time for us, and we hope that Pacifica and the local station management is really supportive of that, and not only supportive of that, but it's going to take steps to ensure that there's deaf access, not only at KPFA, but universally at all all five stations for Pacifica. Right now, people don't have access to the program, and you're really missing out unless you take some steps to get people to access it. The other thing I wanted to touch on is that Pacifica has wisely hired Francie Mueller to do a transition, or rather a strategic plan for the whole all five stations. This is good. But one of the things that in our conversations with Francie is that she might the essence of her work might be just more mostly related to ADA and not really going beyond that. That's not good.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Next speaker is Michael Hammer.
My name is Michael Hammer, and John. My disability is adult misdiagnosed learning disability. We want to thank KPFA for adding a computer with audio editing for the blind and a braille printer. However, access for individuals who currently work at the station, as well as those who wish to listen or begin to participate as staff members, is often difficult, if not impossible. In some cases, as you will hear shortly, access has actually been reduced over the past decade. We found access deficiencies not only in equipment and the physical plant, but also in staff sensitivities to people with disabilities. This included such things as KPFA's hiring practice and apprenticeship program procedures. I want to give you a few couple of examples. There are individuals with mobility impairments who cannot enter the building when the receptionist leaves or is unavailable. And the music library's tall shelves and narrow aisles are highly inaccessible for all but the most able-bodied.
30 seconds.
Okay. While we cannot detail all KPFA's access problems in this short period, we would like to bring... We would like to bring a current problem to your attention. Keep in mind that what you are about to hear is not just one person's issue, but rather an example of the problems faced by many.
Thank you. Jackie Barshak?
My name is Jackie Barshak. I produce the show Women's Magazine. I have been receiving the runaround from management about getting accommodation for my disability, which is an environmental illness. I've been told, go to the business manager. The business manager sends me to the human resources consultant, who then in turn sends me back to the manager, who then, it's a runaround. If I didn't think that Pacifica was firm in its philosophy of human equality, I would think that I was getting the runaround. So I also have been told by the human resources consultant that because my disability doesn't fall within the guidelines of the Americans with Disabilities Act, that there really isn't that much that they're required to do for me. So that is why it's very imperative that that KPFA adopts a policy that does not discriminate against people who have the kinds of disabilities that don't fall within the letter of the law.
You have 30 more seconds. She was just giving you time notice.
So just finally, that I've provided notes from my doctor. I've insisted that because of my environmental illness that I not be exposed to toxic cleansers that are used at the station, and that fragrance-free, scent-free policy be adapted by the station. These are very basic needs that I require in order to get my job done. I'm an unpaid staff producer. So,
thank you very much. Yeah, and by the way, when we call time, if it's not a sentence with about 17 commas, feel free to finish your sentence. We won't cut you off. If you're a 17-comma type, we might, but Chandra.
Hi, my name is Chandra Houtman. I'm a member of the KPFA Access Committee, a listener rep to the KPFA Local Station Board, and I have a hidden disability. I'm partially hearing impaired. Most people don't realize that there are people with hidden disabilities, and because it's not always apparent, they are really discriminated against. Anyway, my part of the report reads, our report details solutions to many of the problems we found and a step-by-step implementation plan for many of them. 4 out of 5 of the access priorities that we had developed have been incorporated into KPFA's fiscal 2007 budget, recently approved by the KPFA Local Station Board, and I believe approved also by the National Board this weekend. They are: ensure that all building entrances are accessible as defined by federal and state regulations, institute sensitivity training for all KPFA staff, paid, unpaid, and volunteer, regarding people with disability issues, create at least one more accessible workstation for disabled programmers at KPFA, and create a fully accessible music database for KPFA computer users so that all programmers with all kinds of access issues can obtain this music. We're in this for the long haul. We want to build a relationship, a continuing relationship, with the current and future management of KPFA, as well as with other members of the KPFA community who are committed to both the ongoing assessment of individual needs and the integration of disabled people at KPFA. And we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chandra.